6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. God, why can't the weekend still be happening? What is that about? Why do I got to come back here and do this? Why do people have to work? Where's that legislation, the nobody has to work anymore legislation? Is that happening anytime soon, Riley?
It's bottled up in committee.
Oh, damn it, because I don't want to do anything anymore. Kalo, how are you? Mark Riley, how are you?
I'm all right, man. How you doing? How's the weekend?
Dude, it was, you know, you want to, here's how I experienced the fireworks last night. Damn it, if that guy doesn't stop that across the street, I'm not going to be able to sleep for tomorrow's work. You know, I was going to bed, and I was hoping, like, you know what, you know, I live in a Queens neighborhood. It's pretty densely populated. There's not going to be any firecrackers, right? Right across
what,
the street.
What, are you crazy?
Right across the street. And it was almost like the guy was, like, standing in front of my window, throwing them up to my window, and they're going.
M80s?
I don't know what they were.
Cherry bombs?
No, I don't know. I don't know, but they were loud, but, you know, gratefully and thankfully, the guy, it didn't stop me from sleeping. And then I call, and my wife calls me right in the morning. She's like, I don't know where Boxy is. Our cat's missing, all right? The cat's missing, and those of you who have a history with the show know that I had a cat pass about, you know, a little less than a year ago, and now she's calling me, the other one's missing, and then she starts in with this one. Like, I'm trying not to freak out. You know, but the cat, this is a cute cat. She goes, I just think some kids blew it up with an M80. And I'm like, what do you got to go there for? Why does it have to be that? So instead of making her feel better, saying, hey, no, it'll be okay. I'm like, well, what kids? What kids are you talking about? There are kids there? Anyway, so dig this, Riley. Apparently 2 billion people watched some form of this Live 8 concert, and I wasn't one of them. You know why?
You were asleep?
No, I'll tell you why. Because I was at home downloading songs for my iPod.
I'm surprised you made it to work.
Me too. I did it. I went and bought the iPod. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know if it's going to wear off. You know, I don't know if this is going to wear off, Kalo, because you have one. I know Riley doesn't have one, but dude, if you got one, you're the guy that needs one. Now look at me. I'm already trying to convert other people. See what it does to you? Now I'm a pod person, and I'm trying to convert Riley. I'm trying to pod him now.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to do the iPod.
It's just a technological fear, but I'll tell you, you would really dig it. The weird thing is, I'm not going to do a big plug for Apple here, but I was going through my CDs,
yeah,
and I don't know how people usually do it, but I was just taking songs that I like off of my CDs. I didn't download. I'm not one of these, like, sort of weird anal archivists, which is sort of like, all of my CDs have equal importance, and they must all be with me at all times. Some of them just suck. There are some CDs I have that are crap.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just taking songs off, and then you put it. The only reason I bought this thing, the only reason, was so I could engage in physical fitness in order to take care of myself. And I got to be honest with you, looking forward to going to the gym today.
Can imagine. What do you got, 5 zillion songs to listen to now?
But they're all my songs. And that's the weird thing about it, is it's like, you know, you're listening and, like, not one of them is going to be one of those songs where you're like, oh, what the hell? Not yet. That's my question, though. I imagine it will come to that. I've already put, like, 650 songs on there.
I got a question. Do they go in alphabetical order automatically? You have to hit a button for
that? They can do all. Yeah, I barely understand.
Automatic.
It all categorizes automatically. And I don't want to sit here and celebrate the iPod, because I feel guilty after, like, 6 months of fighting this thing, mm-hmm. and then I get it. But you know what's interesting is that people say, like, the sound quality is going to be crappy. It's weird, man. You listen to songs, you listen to recordings from the 70s, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's better. You know, they separate digitally. The instruments are separated differently now. And you could hear just how sloppy some of these cats were. I mean, I can't believe it. Like, I'm listening to it, like, oh, my God, I never heard that before. Was that always that screwed up?
Falling out of time.
Sure.
Wrong note or three.
But I'm into that. And I think that was great. Those were the good old days. Those were guys, you know, they play this song. They go, that's a good take. We're keeping it. I felt it. You know, I believe in that. I believe in the rawness of it.
Well, you got to listen to some Monk, man. Monk played wrong notes on purpose.
Yes, I like Monk a lot. I love Monk. After I saw Straight No Chaser, I went on a brief Monk period.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Started spinning around. And
sure. I got a hat. I had to have a specific hat on, and I needed my, anytime I did comedy, I had to have my tea set on stage.
Oh, okay.
So I could have some tea. Yeah, it's very specific. But 2 billion people did watch and participate in Live Aid, and the the G8 leaders did absolutely nothing in response.
Yeah, they were busy. I saw, like, about 15 minutes of it. I saw Rita Marley and her son, I think it's Julian, and a couple of other performers doing Get Up stand-up, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the
it's
kind
on
of
my iPod.
It's on your iPod, Well, I mean, to see these folks just kind of like turn their backs on this as if, you know, hey, gee, nice concert. Now let grown folks do what they're going to do at this summit. What business is it that they have that's so important that they can't say anything about African poverty? I mean, what are they doing?
They just want to dismiss it as being not a priority. They want to dismiss that 2 billion people got together. Well, you know, there is part of me that, you know, when you think of this thing, it's great that it happened. I was very excited that Pink Floyd got together for a few songs.
Yeah.
But in the history of having an effect on actual policy, on actual, you know, global policy, in terms of, you know, I'm sure it elevated awareness. But, I mean, in modern memory, do you have a recollection of where an event like this actually changed things?
Yeah, events like this end up creating some level of momentum. Let me give you a real clear example.
Mm-hmm.
Soweto uprising in South Africa back in 1986 and the oppression that resulted from that uprising was felt around the world, and it drew 250,000 people to Central Park here in New York. And it was part of an ongoing movement that 4 years later led to the freeing of Nelson Mandela.
Well, there you go. So if this elevated awareness enough, just because the G8 leaders did not address it this time, that does not mean that maybe there's a billion more people that understand what's going on in Africa and that, you know, will get activated and mobilized, and then there could be some momentum that could change things in the future. I saw that movie on HBO that Bill Nye was in, the guy who works for the Chancellor of England as his number cruncher and meets that woman before they go to the G8. And it was touching, and I'm sapped. You know, I'm way too lonely. I'm too detached from my wife because she lives elsewhere. I cannot watch any. I'm listening to songs on my iPod that are making me cry. That's how ridiculous I am. And the one thing you do learn about having an iPod, if this is going to obviously weave in throughout the day, is just who are your favorites. If you have any questions as to who your favorites are, the number of songs you will, you know, download from any one particular artist, like there was stuff that I completely forgot I liked because I just didn't want to take up it. You know, I don't want to go through the CDs.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I have a core group of songs that I always come back to. It's somewhat it makes me feel old because I mean I listen to Forest Flower by Charles Lloyd.
Yeah.
That was made in 1966.
But there's no reason. See, that's the thing. You don't have to feel old. Like the reason they resonate with you is because they cause your endorphins to spin and make you feel good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, it takes me back to. I mean, I was 15 years old. I love that particular. That was the piece of music that got me into jazz initially.
See that? I'm tearing up for you.
All you gotta do
is say 15 years old. I'm like, that's right. That was listening to Tom Petty. It was baffling. I'd completely forgotten about the Replacements. I'd completely forgotten about the Meat Puppets. I'd completely forgotten about
don't worry. Tomorrow you'll be in here with another group of artists that you completely forgot about because you're going to be sifting through the 650 songs. Right, Kalo?
But it's not bad if I just watch myself and I don't use it as a drug and I just enjoy it. I mean, there's no reason I can't have music in my life. Listen to me. I'm just like I'm in. I'm like a pod zombie. I'm converting now. I'm converting people, and I want to detach completely, and I'm justifying it. It's just like any other damn drug, Kalo.
I'm so glad you're in.
Oh yeah. Well, I got to talk to you about how to work the damn thing.
Uh-oh.
So, in light of the 2 billion people that watched Live Aid and also the G8 conference, Bush rejects George W. Bush has rejected any type of Kyoto style deal. This is before he went to the G8 in the name of the U.S. economy. He says that he will not sign on to anything that even looks like the Kyoto Accords because there's just no way that this country could possibly trim its environmental crimes back because it'll stifle the economy. I think this is Bush obviously just pandering to his oil company buddies. This has nothing to do with economics, really. Does it,
no,
right?
It has nothing to do with economics. And this is exactly what a lot of Britons feared would happen in terms of George W. Bush essentially boning his boy, Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Blair is the one that's really kind of trying to spearhead this Kyoto-style agreement. And here's his boy who he went to war with, who he went to war for, if the Downing Street memo is to be believed. And what is it? No, we're not doing it.
Well, he's shown a little of that, strange kind of pathological moxie in some other instances when it comes to, Alberto Gonzalez and the Supreme Court, which we'll talk about in just a second. But it's interesting. There was an op-ed piece that I read recently the other day by Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is implementing the California greenhouse gas law, which requires a lower emitting vehicle to be sold in the state starting in 2009. He claims that the state is accelerating the timetable to get more energy renewable resources, such as wind, solar, geothermal, biomass conversion by 20% by 2010 and 33% by 2020. This guy, who a lot of people are critical of, you read this op-ed piece, you'd think that he was, green, entirely green.
Mr. Green. Yeah. Look, California has always led the nation in terms of considering these kinds of issues. Mark, I didn't know until I had to get my catalytic converter changed on my car that California has a tougher emission standard and therefore a different catalytic converter on cars sold in their state. I had to get a new converter special from California.
Right.
Because the ordinary one doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Well, see, if the thing is, you put a pretty good timeline on this. So this is an interesting thing about politicians. So they can say whatever they want. When it's going to
be 100 by the time this is done.
Yeah, starting in 2009, this thing's going to kick in. Hey, it looks like, I hope to God, this is a liberal conundrum, is that, last week we spent the week fighting for the autonomy of a writer and the freedom of the press in terms of protecting sources. But now the source turns out to be, it might be Karl Rove. So now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I want the free press, but God, if they nail this bastard on this thing, I'm going to be kind of happy about that too. Does that make me evil? It's 17 past the hour. It's Tuesday. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning's Edition. It's Air America Radio.
MorningsEdition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningsEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 22 past the hour. It's Tuesday. We're back. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. How's that grab you? Pretty good? We're going to get into, that was the Replacements. I listened to like hundreds of Replacements. I didn't even realize I had so many Replacements albums. There's only a few albums, but then there was stuff released later. Great. Those guys rocked. All right, so look. The bottom line is we're going to talk about the Supreme Court nominee in just a few minutes. This is the first time in almost 11 years that there's been a confirmation hearing for a Supreme Court justice, eh?
Yeah, back in the day.
All right, so let's get into this, though, because last week we spent a lot of time talking about Matthew Cooper, Time Magazine, a reporter whose computer information was turned over to the grand jury at the behest of Time Incorporated relating to his sources. His sources have come into question in this grand jury investigation of who dropped the name, who basically leaked CIA operative Valerie Plame's name to the press. Now, last week, I was sympathizing with Cooper because this was a corporation that stepped in, despite his wishes to keep his sources confidential, said, sorry, buddy, you got to take the hit on this one because, you work for us. We're turning this information in.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that, those sources, you have to protect sources to guarantee a free press. And that's obviously, that is a necessity. And I believe that. But turns out it might be Karl Rove, and these accusations and these sources, they might have teeth. We might be able to nail this bastard. So although I'm all for protecting sources, I'm sort of happy in this case, if we can take down Karl Rove. Wouldn't that be great, Riley?
Well, it's interesting. Mark, Lawrence O'Donnell posted on the Huffington Post, that he revealed on the McLaughlin Group that the Time emails would reveal that Rove was the source for this particular story.
Yeah.
Michael Isikoff in Newsweek also spoke to Karl Rove about this. And Karl Rove admits that he did, in fact, speak to, I believe it was Time Magazine.
Like four times. He definitely is not hiding that. His lawyer seems a little panicky to me in some respects. And, the charge would be perjury, right? What would be the charge against Rove? What would it be?
Well, I mean, what the charge against Rove could very easily be that he broke the law by revealing the name of an undercover CIA operative.
Okay, so it doesn't have a specific name. Now, if he were this, even if the reporter said to Carl Rove, "Hey, Carl, is it Valerie Plame? You know, just nod your head." If he nodded his head, he's guilty. Correct?
See, there are a lot of different ways that someone, a source, could parse this particular story. They could say, for example, if it's not Valerie Plame, I'm going to get up and walk out of the room or something, you know, some kind of code language.
Well, I think we should hold him to the fire, though. I think Chuck Schumer, you know, who lately in the last few days has shown some nads and, you know, is really kind of making me feel proud that he's my senator. Schumer said, quote, "I think America would feel a whole lot better if Karl Rove got up and made a statement that he did not leak the information, nor did he order anyone else to leak the information," end quote. See, I like, and he said that on ABC this week. I like Schumer saying that because this is an administration, this is a group of guys that refuse to apologize for anything, refuse to take responsibility for anything, and just to get Rove out there, you know, in that light, as somebody who is one of the accused, would make me feel better.
See, one of the things that's interesting here, Mark, is that you have two conflicting statements that are at odds with each other. On the one hand, you have Lawrence O'Donnell saying that it was Karl Rove. On the other hand, Karl Rove's lawyer, while acknowledging that he did, in fact, speak with Matthew Cooper during the same week in July of 2003 when this story was being reported.
Yeah.
He's saying, look, Karl Rove did speak to Cooper, but Karl Rove did not out Valerie Plame to Cooper. He was not the source of the leak. That's what Rove's lawyer is saying. So you got two conflicting statements here.
Well, it would be great if Karl Rove got up and made a statement as somebody who's being accused of something. I would like to see that. I think Robert Novak, it's been assumed, has clearly made a deal with the special prosecutor, and some of the other reporters who have talked to prosecutors only talk to them with the permission of their sources.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew Cooper agreed to discuss, you know, Scooter Libby, who was Cheney's top guy.
Yeah,
but
Libby said yes.
Right.
Go ahead.
But this whole Rove thing's something else, but I'm a little happy that Rove's in the hot seat.
Yeah, and he is in the hot seat.
So Supreme Court, we're going to get into that. That's going to be the week for us. We're going to start in a few minutes here, so stay with us. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. It's 27 past the hour.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Yeah, 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Clear some stuff up because I'm stupid. You can't be guilty of perjury. We're talking about Karl Rove and he might have been the source of the leak of Valerie Plame's name, who is the CIA operative who was undercover at the time. It was reported by Robert Novak that she had given her husband the recommendation. She recommended her husband to do the investigation of the yellow cake, Nigerian yellow cake.
Yes.
Now, if none of this makes sense to you.
Nigerian yellow cake from Niger.
Yellow cake from Niger.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this is a long history of a lot of stuff. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, let's just get to what I made a mistake about, which is perjury. You cannot be guilty of perjury unless you go against testimony.
In other words, you have to be sworn. You have to be giving sworn testimony.
And if you lie, you're a perjurer.
Yeah.
But leaking the identity of a CIA operative, that's a federal offense, and that's it. And if Karl Rove is guilty of that, wouldn't that be sweet, even though the way we found out was by giving a little less freedom to the press and sort of saying that, well, Time Inc. is evil, but, you know, it's complicated because I feel guilty.
It's a bit of a paradox.
All right, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So thank God we got this machine. It's time for the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's feed it some headlines, my friends. Mm-hmm. Here we go from The Guardian. No favors on climate change, Bush says. No favors on climate change, Bush says. Translation. Bush to G8, choke on it. From San Diego Union Tribune, NASA scientists smash spacecraft into comets. NASA scientists smash spacecraft into comets. Translation, Xbox game NASA Comet Smash due in stores next Friday. From the Voice of America, Live 8 concerts raise awareness about poverty. Live 8 concerts raise awareness about poverty. Translation, concert to ease white guilt called huge success. There you go. Okay, man. So now, you know, we go away for 3 days and the entire Supreme Court falls apart.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like when I saw that on Friday, right?
Yeah.
Saturday O'Connor retires. I'm like, oh, great.
Now I was on my way home. I was on my way up the FDR Drive afterwards.
Were you surprised it was her?
Yeah, I was, because I really thought, first of all, that either Rehnquist or Stevens is the oldest justice on the court. He's been on the court for 30 years. He's 10 years older than Sandra Day O'Connor. I thought he might be first.
Let's understand out there in the land what's at stake here is that, you know, if you're a liberal, a progressive, or a Democrat, if you're somebody who voted for George Bush just because you were scared, well, this is what was really at stake. When it comes right down to it, is now we have to accept the fact that there's going to be somebody put into the Supreme Court that we don't agree with on most things. That is a reality that cannot be changed because somebody put this guy in office. Whether it was fraudulent or not, he is in office. And if you voted because you were scared for this president, yet you didn't believe in what he had to say, then this is your mistake. Now, we have to now accept somebody who is... How many times have you said this? Man, I really hope a moderate Republican gets in there. Hey, I think Alberto Gonzalez would be the best choice. How many times have your liberal have to say that?
Well, you know, it's funny. If you go back to 1991, when Thurgood Marshall retired from the Supreme
mm-hmm.
Court, there were a lot of people who were saying the same thing. Remember that George H.W. Bush was president.
Mm-hmm.
And there were questions about whether or not, he would replace Thurgood Marshall with another African-American, and whether or not that African-American, if it turned out to be one, would have the same judicial temperament as Thurgood Marshall. And, of course, Thurgood Marshall was one of the, quote, more liberal members of the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Well, George W. Bush filled that seat with Clarence Thomas, who has been a very, very reliable conservative in terms of most of the rulings. He sided generally with Justices Scalia and Rehnquist. They formed the three-person conservative bloc. Now, interestingly enough, Mark, if you look at Anthony Kennedy, who was also considered to be a very doctrinaire conservative at the time he was appointed to the court, he has proven not to be so. He has actually ended up being one of the more moderate members of the bench.
And Sandra Day O'Connor, also a more moderate member of the Supreme Court, aside from the fact that she voted to stop the recount. But, you know, outside of that, she has been a swing vote and a deciding vote on some, you know, pretty interesting...
On a bunch of different cases, including several civil rights cases, enemy combatant cases, the environment.
Enemy combatants in the sense that she cast a swing vote holding that American citizens detained as enemy combatants within the U.S. must be provided a level of due process in
yes.
the civilian courts. She cast votes in favor of separation of church and state on a couple of instances. But let's now talk about what the possibilities are. Let's start with Gonzalez, and let's do that. Let's do Alberto Gonzalez right now,
okay.
Because this has been talked about. Now, you know that President Bush, while he was campaigning, said he wants to put someone like Scalia or Thomas in there, all right?
Yeah.
He says, and now he's got an issue with his base, or the extreme right of his base. They have problems. They have problems with Gonzalez, because Gonzalez, basically, when he was a Texan Supreme Court, he voted in 2000 to strike down a parental notification law for minors wishing to have an abortion. So it's not like he's, you know, he's like a complete liberal, but the conservative right, the crypto-fascist zombie brigade, does not want Gonzalez. And Gonzalez says, you know, I know he knows something, and I think it might be him, because Gonzalez says, it doesn't matter when anyone says, all that matters is, quote, what the President of the United States thinks of me, end quote. Gonzalez, like Rover, two of the prime, you know, the prime movers of Bush's policy and ideology, they created Bush, or Rove being the intellectual top and Gonzalez being a smart bottom. But,
smart bottom.
The loyalty goes, these guys, it's a symbiotic relationship between Gonzalez and Bush and Rove as well. Bush needs these guys.
Well, he needs these guys, but what you have here, too, are the religious right hitching their wagon to someone that they think has equal credentials, in other words, another Latino, who's more conservative than Alberto Gonzalez, and who has, when you look at his paper trail, written against Roe versus Wade on constitutional grounds.
Is that Garza?
Emilio Garza,
Who's
actually older than Karl Rove. He's from Texas. But see, the interesting part about this is that Bush has said publicly to some of these right-wing groups who are making noise about Gonzalez, hey, back off, he's my friend.
Yeah, that was almost the exact quote, you know, and that he also asked the freaks in his base, the Christo-Fascist Honor Gay, to, quote,
freaks,
tone down the heated rhetoric.
Yeah.
So he's definitely standing up for his buddy, and I think that they know something because, you know, Gonzalez also said they've been hammering this out, this nomination, since 2001. So there's definitely a short list, and I believe that he knows he's on it, and I believe that he knows he's it, but you don't think so.
I'm not sure because I don't think that the Bush administration is looking at this as a single nominee. What I think the Bush administration has, and I hope the Democrats are on this, but I believe that the Republicans here have a longer-term agenda. I think that they believe that before Bush's term is over, Rehnquist will either die or leave.
Well,
and
he said he's going to die there, right?
Well, he kind of said that, but you never know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people it's not set in stone, let's put it that way. Stevens is 10 years older than Sandra Day O'Connor, and I think the Republicans also believe that there's a possibility he will retire at a point. That means not one, possibly two, maybe at the outside three vacancies that Bush will be able to fill on the United States Supreme Court. And I think their end game here, and certainly the end game of the religious right, is to create a 6-3 majority on issues like affirmative action, on issues like abortion.
So the Christian right obviously wants them to completely turn back Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and what this means is that he can put one moderate conservative on the bench and then put two other doctrinaire conservatives.
Well, it seems like the choices are, you know, there's only a couple of moderates out there, and the rest are what you call doctrinaire conservatives.
Conservatives.
Yeah, well, can I call them ideologues or conservative activist judges? Judges that can be
counted on
to legislate from the bench as opposed to interpret the Constitution?
Absolutely. But see, here's the X factor, and this is the part that's really, you know, people said when that gang of 14 made that little deal they made on filibustering, now it's coming back to haunt. It's only 6 weeks after they made the compromise, and now it's coming back to haunt. The question is, what constitutes an extraordinary circumstance? Remember that they agreed not to filibuster unless it was under extraordinary circumstances. Now, does that mean, for example, that if Bush comes up with Janice Rogers Brown's name, is that an extraordinary circumstance? The Democrats, some Democrats like Chuck Schumer and others, say yes, it is. There are others, Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Orrin Hatch, others even on the Judiciary Committee, who say no, it's not.
Well, the problem is with this compromise is that they have the upper hand because they are the majority, so they're going to be the ones that decide. It's not some sort of, you know, bipartisan decision-making process. The Republicans, it seems to me, are going to be able to say, nah, that's not an extraordinary circumstance, and they say that ideology isn't.
Well, see, if they say that and the Democrats decide to filibuster anyway, then the nuclear option comes back on the table.
That means that there is no deal. But that's what I'm saying is that it's a fixed game. Is that they made this agreement to stop the nuclear option in relation to the Bolton decisions. Now with the Supreme Court thing is that the deal still holds, but because they're the majority, they can decide the terms. There's no argument. It seems like a fixed game that if they decide that ideological questions or that line of questioning of these nominees is not an extraordinary circumstance, then that's the end of it. So if the Democrats say, well, we're going to ask them anyways, then they say, well, we can't protect you from frisk now. So it just seems that the whole thing was fixed to begin with, and this was a screwed-up deal to begin with.
Well, remember, though, that there was some question even at the time as to whether or not frisk had the votes to invoke the nuclear option. He kept saying he did, but it was never put to the ultimate test.
But this deal that these 14 struck, these seven Republicans, you know, obviously he didn't have the votes because they made the deal.
They made the deal, but now the question is, how many of them, if confronted with the Democrats saying, we're going to filibuster because we don't like the politics of this nominee, What will the Republican, what will people like Lindsey Graham do? What will some of the people like Olympia Snowe and others who were part of this deal, where will they go on this?
Well, there's a couple of strategies that are obviously taking shape. We'll get into those in just a second. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
From Monkey Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Damn, it feels good.
50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Thanks for being with us. It's Tuesday. I hope you had a good weekend. I hope it was safe. I hope you had a good time. You didn't blow your finger off or...
Oh, wow.
Or get too drunk. Or, look, you know, we know a lot of people out there that are out of work and spent your Sunday probably leafing through the want ads or monster.com. We want to help. We want to help be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here's our Morning Sedition special Tuesday help wanted job listing.
I hope.
Needed, the final cog. The Bush administration has an opening for a Supreme Court judge. Yes, psych! In your face, non-believers! If selected, you will be the final piece in an intricate plan now approaching fruition to seize the reins of earthly power in order to prepare for the imminent return of our Savior on rolling clouds of glory, from whence shall he smite the ungodly and cast them into a lake of fire which he now prepareth. To be considered for this position, you must be among the chosen ones who were anointed in the time before time when our Father did lay the foundations of heaven and earth. Also, you should have a law degree, or it looks bad. One other thing, if at any point in your past you tried to derive humor from what appeared to be a pubic hair on a can of Pepsi, please do not respond to this ad. There you go.
There's why not? The other guy did.
That's right. So, dude, this is dense stuff for me, and I'm working through it. I'm trying to understand it. Basically, what's at stake here is, folks, with this new Supreme Court justice, what's at stake are some of the core values of the liberal and progressive and what I believe to be the Democratic agenda. That is reproductive freedom, affirmative action, and civil rights.
Absolutely. And this is what the right has waited for a better than a generation at this point. Remember that I'm old enough to remember, Mark. I think you're probably too young for this. But I remember riding across highways in the Northeast and seeing impeach Earl Warren. I mean, mm-hmm. I was a kid when mm-hmm. I saw it. I mean, who is Earl Warren?
I remember the word Warren Commission. And I remember because when I was seven, I was very big into the conspiracy of the JFK killing. I spent almost all my time. Other kids were out playing on the monkey bars, not me. Mm-hmm. I was saying there has to be another shooter.
Well, see, here's the thing about Earl Warren that people forget. Mm-hmm. Earl Warren was appointed by Dwight Eisenhower. Earl Warren was appointed as a conservative member of the Supreme Court. And what did Earl Warren turn around and do? He presided over the Brown versus Board of Education decision in 1954, confounding the very guy who appointed him, Dwight Eisenhower, who was opposed to Brown versus Board of Education, quiet as it's kept. So you see, and of course, that Warren Commission Court, you had the Miranda decision, you had all of these decisions that took place during the late 50s into the early 60s that were done in the name of the Chief Justice at that time, Earl Warren. And the important part of that is you never know exactly who you get when you nominate someone to the United States Supreme
Court. It's always, that's a lot of people are surprised when they look back at the record of Sandra Day O'Connor, just how many decisions she made that, you know, were certainly moderate, if not, you know, somewhat liberal.
Yeah, and I mean, there are others.
But let's not make a mistake in characterizing this court, this Rehnquist court, as being liberal in any way.
Oh, no, absolutely
I mean, this was a hotbed of conservative judicial activism.
They were involved in a number of decisions. If you start going back over the record,
33 federal statutes were struck down since 1995, which is apparently an unprecedented rate.
That is unprecedented. And you have a court that has not, I mean, if you look at 2000 and you look at the 2000 elections mm-hmm. and the role that the court played, you realize that this court was, acted not just in an activist way, but in a way that decided a presidential election. Mark, that is really unheard of.
That's severely, that is very activist.
They also, in the extreme.
Exactly. They also struck down the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which required employers to justify in strong terms any practices that interfered with religious practices. They also struck down the Violence Against Women Act, which gives gay victims of gender motivated violence a right to sue in federal court. I mean, this was not in any way a liberal court by any stretch of the imagination. So once they start spinning those talking points, don't buy it. Now, the House Republicans are already saying that there are certain types of questions that are inappropriate to ask these judicial nominees. They're trying to limit access as well that senators will have to FBI documents. Now, to me, this is interesting because the White House is scared that they might not know some things, and that makes them uncomfortable. So they are trying to control and hide everything they can because secrecy is their specialty of this administration. So it baffles me that already they're saying, look, we can't give them full FBI access because that means that some of their nominees have some sort of filthy past, are either, you know, morally compromised or have a conflict of interest. Now, this is something that a strategy on behalf of the Democrats, which I think might be smart in terms of, with like Bolton, they have been able to stall things because they're not getting the information they want about Bolton. Now, if they use that strategy again, which would enable them to not engage in a filibuster, but enable them to force the, or at least move towards getting the information that they require to make a decent vetting of a nominee, then that could stifle the process a little too.
Well, see, what you have here, Mark, again, is a locked battle. Remember that people like Lindsey Graham, one of the compromisers in terms of the filibuster issue, said that extraordinary circumstance had to involve issues of character, responsibility. In other words, some allegation of malfeasance. Where are you going to find that allegation of malfeasance? In an FBI report.
Mm-hmm.
So by keeping those kind of documents away from members of the Judiciary Committee that are supposed to be scrutinizing the nominee, it means that there is that much less likelihood that those kinds of character issues will derail a nominee.
Well, this is a fight that has to be fought because it seems to me that with this Gang of 14 and this deal that they cut with these Republicans, you know, to not to filibuster, that the Republicans have too much power to decide what, you know, what the questioning can be. And it seems to me that if there are these Democrats like Lieberman, Byrd, Nelson, Landrieu, if they're willing to take abortion off the table to honor this deal, then they are reprehensible, and they are no different than Republicans. So that can't happen. So this information thing might be the way to go. We're going to talk more about this, obviously, throughout the show and many other stories. We've got, you know, they flew a rocket into a comet.
What?
America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark here on Morning Radio, Air America Radio.
Air America Morning Radio.
That's right. I'm Mark Maron. That's my buddy Mark Riley.
Hiya.
What are you laughing about now, Kalo? Now here's what happened, folks, and I'll just be brief with it. I finally buckled and surrendered, and I bought an iPod, a 6-gig iPod, and, I got to be honest with you, I'm a pod zombie now. I'm a convert, but I'm only going to use it at the gym and maybe on the way to work. That's it, though. That's it. I'm stopping there. I spent the entire weekend putting songs that I like into it, and I'm having a pretty good time. Is it wrong for me to have a good time? Have I done something horrendously wrong?
No, you're doing something good, and especially I'm laughing because thankfully, we now have Mark Maron to talk about the iPod.
Oh, yeah.
And all the interesting little things that go on with it.
You know what? You're collaborating with Satan, my man.
Yeah, well, I've done that before.
That's right.
I've done that before. You know, the weird thing is, Riley, and I'm surprised by how quickly I've converted to this, is that I have not listened to some of my favorite music in a long time. And now, literally, I just bought this so I would have a better time at the gym.
Okay.
Really really, that was my only intention. And now I can listen to the most esoteric choices of any of my record collection, you know, just like that, just because I want to hear it. And it's not horrible. You know, I don't know how it's going to unfold or how much this is going to pollute my life. I do know it's taken a lot of time to put the CDs in there. But look, I'll let you know. I'll keep you
abreast. Does it take a long time for you to get to what track you want? I'm just curious.
No.
If you're sitting there and suddenly something flashes, you know, AC/DC flashes through your
seconds.
Mind.
Seconds. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. We'll be broadcasting live from Vox Pop Coffee Shop on Cortelue. Is it Cortelue?
Cortelue
Road in Flatbush, Brooklyn, this Friday, July 8th. Come see myself and Mark. That's this week?
Yes, oh, this Friday.
That's
man.
Exciting. You have some free coffee, get some Air America merchandise. We'll be hanging out. These are always fun. And, you know, the guys come down, the Lawton Smalls and Cardinal Milpington, Johnny K Street, and I think that the Revolutionary might be out of town this weekend. But aside from that, everyone else is coming. You can also podcast Morning's Edition. I don't know if that's all set or not. I don't think you can. Yeah. Podcast Morning. You can take Morning's Edition with you in your MP3 player. You can go to morningsedition.com and click on the podcast link to download recent shows. There you go. Try that. In a few minutes, well, not a few minutes, a little while, FBI whistleblower Colleen Rowley will be with us to talk about her attempt to become a member of Congress.
Yeah.
Slate's Dahlia Lithwick is going to talk about the resignation of Sandra Day O'Connor. That's going to be a theme throughout the show, probably throughout the week in terms of the nomination process, the fight that we have on behalf of people who care about what happens in the Supreme Court. We got to at least find a moderate that we can somehow, you know, agree on, get excited about. In certain respects, we've got to try to stop them putting an activist conservative judge in. And we'll also be joined by a guy named Chris Landau. Landon, who is actually an invited guest, as opposed to the media appearances he makes. Apparently this is a guy that will, you know, he's the guy that you see behind the newscaster in an outfit, you know, there with a lion's head on or making some sort of prank. He's a prankster, basically, and he's going to tell us how that's more than just funny. It's bigger than that. It's got some real momentum.
And teeth.
Yeah, it's got some teeth, baby. So look, is Bloomberg deluding himself? I just heard that they're pretty sure. He's like, it's going to happen. New York's going to get the Olympics. What is that about? Everything's good. The stadium's going to be in Queens now. Everything's right on schedule.
Sure it is.
Is he crazy or is it just a press push? What is that?
Both.
Uh-huh.
You're right on both counts. I mean, look, it's nice they went with all the fanfare. They brought Condoleezza Rice over there. They, you know, I shouldn't say over there. Condoleezza Rice came to New York to try and push this bid. All of this stuff should have been done a year ago.
Tomorrow at 7:30, they are going to tell us.
Tomorrow at 7:30, we will find out that New York did not, in fact, win the Olympic
bid. Wouldn't you? How will you feel if they do?
If they do?
Wouldn't you? That'd be amazing.
I will have to strip naked in Macy's window.
Oh, well, what do you think it's going to be? Where do you think it's going
to
be?
I'm sure you will. Everybody has thought up until now that it's been Paris, and that Paris pretty much has the lock, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was Paris, but I'm kind of feeling London suddenly. I woke up this morning and thought, you know, London might just win this thing.
You got family there. You were feeling I've London got... this morning? Are you sure?
No, I woke up this morning because I knew that...
Your wife's from London, isn't she?
I know. But the decision was... I knew the decision was going to be made tomorrow.
Yeah.
And remember that London... most people don't realize this. London pole vaulted over Madrid already. Right? Mm-hmm. A year ago, London was in fourth place. Mm-hmm. Now London's in second place. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Wait, Bradley, so I'm sorry. So most people wake up and think about, I don't know.
I'm not most
breakfast.
People.
You wake up.
I'm not most people. That's all you need to know.
I don't know. Maybe London. I'm feeling London.
Yeah.
Going to
that's
be.
Right.
That was his first.
That's
he actually
right.
woke up in a sweat going, it's going to be London, the Olympics.
No, not at all. Not at all. You I just what? Woke up this morning and thought to myself, this is going to be my prediction for the day. London, not Paris.
You know what I thought when I woke up?
What?
Should I bring my iPod to work? Should I bring it to work and put it in my bag? Because I could probably listen to it. It's already happening, man. It's polluting. I am a pod zombie, and I'm trying to convert people already.
You
it's ridiculous.
That? And I'm crazy. Right?
So NASA blasted a space probe into the orbit and had it chase down a comet and then just slam into it.
Yep.
Just bam! Just slam right into it, man. It hit, like, apparently the impact would have been as if a truck going 20,000 miles an hour smacked into something. But it was on purpose. This is a fascinating thing. Apparently, the probe was taking pictures of this comet as it approached the comet all the way up to impact. Now, I didn't know this because I'm stupid, but a comet is just a huge, it's basically just a big flying dirty ice ball, all right? Did you know this, Riley? That
no.
The sun and the planets were apparently formed by a collapsing cloud of gas and dust about 4.5 billion years ago, all right? And comets, apparently, are the leftover sort of like pieces, fragments, building blocks of a solar system. So their idea was NASA was going to take this probe, take pictures of its approach to the comet to see the surface, and then just blast a hole in it so they can take a look inside and perhaps sort of see, you know, the history of the solar system in there by, you know, particles and layers and, you know, with the science gobbledygooky stuff. You know, they're gonna answer some questions.
Frozen balls of dirty ice rocking.
Dig that, right? How do you like that?
Whoa.
Also, the United Church of Christ has done something that no other church certainly has done, and they have made it okay for gay people to get married.
Yes.
That's very nice. Apparently, the rulemaking body voted overwhelmingly Monday to approve a resolution that endorses same-sex marriage. And also, there was a very funny word in the article. It's like, roughly 80% of the church's general synod.
Synod. Synod?
I think synod. It is synod, yeah. Okay, well, I like synod because that sounds like an alien. What is a synod?
Huh?
What is a synod?
That's like the general conclave of the church.
So it's it's like a legislating body, a synod, or is it the...
Yeah, it's kind of a body that votes on issues that face that particular...
So it's a group of leaders.
And you know who's part of the United Church of Christ, don't you? Our good friend Reverend Forbes.
From
Riverside Church, absolutely.
Lovely man.
Absolutely, and I'm sure he was one of the people that pushed very hard to get this done.
Let's have a little listen to something that Reverend Forbes had to say on our show once before.
We better go into our values, and I don't mean two values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the broad values upon which this nation was built, and that includes care for those who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It means productivity based on regulations that are fair for all of the people. It is based on a global vision that we are the global leaders. What is our vision for the globe, and how do we manifest that in our own nature? And we're going to be discussing how do religious values stop destroying folks and actually build up community and get us ready for the mission that is ahead.
That is the Reverend Forbes on our show from a while ago. We had to have him in and talk about some stuff again because he was basically talking about what's important to the progressives, to the Democrats. What does it mean to be a member of this country? He's a beautiful man.
A man who really, I think, will be a point person in redefining precisely what religion's role is in politics and certainly maybe taking some of this foolishness away from the religious right in that, you know, they believe that their brand of Christianity is the only one that counts.
Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff coming out. You know, Noah Feldman was here last week to talk about similar stuff in terms of, you know, how you approach the Constitution around this stuff. So, look, let's talk about Karl Rove for a minute because I'd like to think that he is in trouble. Apparently, you know, after all the talk that we talked about last night about Time Magazine, Time Incorporated, turning in the computer of their reporter, Matthew Cooper, who was holding out, you know, because he was trying to protect his sources in terms of who outed Valerie Plame, the CIA operative, wife of Ambassador Joe Wilson. Robert Novak wrote the piece on, but there's a grand jury investigation, and Matthew Cooper and Judith
Miller
from the New York Times were holding out because they believe in fighting for the free press, and I believe it too, that sources should be protected in order for us to be able to get the information so there are anonymous sources. But now Time Inc. has given over the computer hard drive to the grand jury, and it turns out that Karl Rove actually talked to Matthew Cooper several times, and he may be the source of the leak, which thrills me.
Be careful what you wish for.
Okay, but see, now I
have... No, not you.
No.
I'm talking about people who wanted this stuff released.
Now, Matthew Cooper, though, is in a weird position because he was holding out. I don't know if the source is going to be so quick to talk to him now because he was sold out by his own company, you know, at the behest of the grand jury, whereas he was prepared and willing to do jail time, and I think that that was noble of him, but yet I do like the fact that it's Karl Rove. So what do I do with this? Was it right that it's a conundrum.
It
you
is
know,
apparently.
How am I supposed to feel? How do you feel? 866-303-2270. Was it right? Should we feel good that the information was gotten this way? Is it a slippery slope to us validating, you know, the press being compromised by these corporate entities? It's difficult. All I know is that I want Rove to go down, and I don't. There's part of me that's just sort of like, I don't care how it happened. 866-303-2270. Am I being bad?
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're talking to you about this strange sort of I don't know if it's a conundrum, I don't know what you would call it, but I feel a little weird because, you know, I felt I was pissed off at Time Incorporated for ratting out their reporter, you know, not ratting him out, but turning over the hard drive of his computer, of Matt Cooper's their reporter's computer. Matt Cooper had been standing strong against the grand jury to protect his sources, so Time Inc. just hijacks that, turns his computer in, and now it turns out that his source might have been Karl Rove in terms of leaking the information about Valerie Plame, who is a CIA operative, and that's a federal offense. So now, obviously, I'm happy that Rove might take a hit on a federal offense, though, you know, knowing Rove, he won't. He'll squirm out of it somehow. But, you know, it's one of those contradictory things. We wouldn't have never known this, perhaps, had they not turned over the computer, yet I was against them turning over the computer. It's one of those things that's making my brain hurt.
Yeah, and I mean, we now have Larry O'Donnell essentially saying, yes, Karl Rove is, in fact, the leaker.
And he just said it because it's now confirmed. I mean, he wasn't going to say it before. He said he knew for months, O'Donnell.
He said he knew for months, but he didn't want to get called before the grand jury. Now he says that he's had gotten access to Time's emails and that it contained in those emails for him is proof that it's Rove. But see, there is a larger question here, and that is, will sources stop talking to journalists
right.
as a result of all this?
Let's see what other people are thinking about this this conflict I'm feeling. Chris, listening to LIB in New York City. How are you?
Hey, Chris.
Hello, Chris? Chris, no? Not going to happen.
Wait
you
a minute.
See, the weird thing is that these kind of... Yeah, you got him, Chris? How are you?
Hello?
Hey,
hey
Chris.
What's going on?
Hi, good morning. You know, I'm conflicted, too. I agree with Mark Maron in that, you know, the sources, the whole source of theory, you know, will people be dissuaded from doing it? But this was such a heinous and subversive act to out a CIA operative. It just, I mean, I can't even I can't even verbalize.
Yeah, how angry.
How terrible it is.
Yeah.
These are the people that are supposed to be protecting us on the most clandestine line of the front lines, and you out somebody just to... to exact some kind of vengeance.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Vengeance.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
I think, you know, the ends in this instance justifies the means. And hey, to use the Republicans' own justification, this is war. I mean, you want to justify revealing sources. I don't know that this was necessarily revealed. Does a priest, you know, have to remain confidential in a confessional when somebody says I'm about to murder somebody or you know?
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. And, but I think a priest does have to, yeah.
Yeah, I think a priest would be, I mean, I don't know that there's any difference in terms of a priest's obligation, depending on what someone confesses.
But apparently, according to the laws of the church, he does have to.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, this guy's point is all right, and we're all going to try to to rationalize on some level the justification of this. But this is one of those things where you have a principle that has been overrided by an entity that you're against, Time Incorporated in this situation. Yet out of that comes this information that could very well serve our cause. I mean, I have to stand by those principles if I can, though I am excited about this. That doesn't mean that I want to override those principles always, just when it behooves me, right? Is that what it comes down to? Jack, how are you in Michigan? What do you think?
Hey, Jack.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind about this?
Well, I wanted to tell you, I don't think it's a conundrum at all. In most cases, confidentiality of sources is intended to protect a whistleblower that wants to remain anonymous.
Okay.
And in this case, we don't have a whistleblower that wants to remain anonymous. We have a treasonous felon that doesn't want to get in trouble.
And
that's entirely a different thing from a confidential whistleblower.
Very good observation. Thanks, Jack. Wow.
Mm.
How do you like that?
Although all of that is alleged now.
Right.
The treasonous part.
Yeah, well, that's fine, but that's an interesting difference to make, that, you know, a whistleblower who's actually giving information to bring down, you know, an entity or a power that be, and they want to remain confidential so they don't get, you know, implicated or hurt. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
it's different than a guy who's, like, protecting himself.
Well, see, Rove wasn't just protecting himself here. What Rove was doing was trying to discredit Joe Wilson. Remember, that's what all
right,
of this
but,
was
but
about.
He was still, you know, he was still doing what he was doing to use the press in an act of vengeance and politically motivated vengeance that could be criminal. It's different than somebody saying, look, you know, I want justice to be done, but you can't bring my name into it or I can't talk to you.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. But see, what happens if, for example, a whistleblower wants to release classified documents that could be illegal?
Well, speaking of whistleblowers, Riley, we got Colleen Rowley. Colleen Rowley.
Oh, yeah. Whistleblower first class.
Is running for Congress. You might remember her for, you know, sort of blowing the whistle on the FBI in terms of letting things slide.
Yeah.
But we will talk to her about that and much more coming up next here on Air America Radio at 27 past the hour.
Listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you're feeling okay, not too hungover, too screwed up, or too deaf, or too without sleep. Any of those things that can happen on the 4th of July. We've been talking about sources, about, you know, protecting sources. And we had an interesting call that said that there's difference between someone who criminally leaks information and a whistleblower. And our next guest had exposed the FBI's investigative lapses before 9/11, became its most famous whistleblower. And now she's running for a congressional seat in Minnesota. Joining us now by phone is Colleen Rowley. Good morning, Colleen.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
So what?
Recovering from yesterday.
Oh, yeah? What'd you do? Did you get a little out of control?
Actually, I'm preparing to announce my candidacy for Congress, so we were making T-shirts a lot of the day.
Oh, like you were just sitting around silk screening shirts?
Yeah, we're painting our own T-shirts to stay on a low budget.
Oh, that's nice. So why did you decide to run for Congress, after all?
Well, our district has an incumbent who votes lockstep with the Bush administration and the Republican leadership. He's tied to Tom DeLay. So, for starters, there's a lot to criticize and complain of in terms of leadership and representation of our district.
Okay. So now in terms of your role in revealing some stuff about the FBI, how much of a role did 9/11 play in your decision to become a congressperson?
Well, 9/11 is kind of, I suppose, the turning point for a lot of the mistakes and errors. There were mistakes pre-9/11, and then a lot of pressure after 9/11 actually to cover up for those errors. And if you know my role in writing that letter, it was to expose and unravel all of the various individual mistakes as well as the endemic problems in order to improve after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the sad truth is that there's been a lot of continuing, almost a chain, a domino chain of mistakes that just continues to happen. And unless people step up to the plate and try to reverse this, I don't know what's, you know, I really am worried about the direction of the country.
Well, that's an incredible concern. Now, in terms of being from the FBI, I mean, in terms of the stuff that you revealed, what are the ongoing problems in terms of communications and getting things done in a proper chain of events?
Well, you know, you can look at it all as falling under the umbrella of ethical decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key concepts, there's a bunch of things that we're not doing right according to what ethics would tell us to do. There's something in ethics called the transparency test to determine right from wrong. Very, very basic. You say to yourself, you know, if everyone knew what I was about to do, would I do it? If grandma was looking over my shoulder, would I continue to do it?
Mm.
And usually you can determine right from wrong by using that test.
Mm-hmm.
In government, we're doing just the opposite. Secrecy is maybe double or triple, even in terms of what's classified, secrecy agreements with employees. And then you wonder why, for instance, whistleblowers, people would not have to become whistleblowers if there were mechanisms of raising concerns and improper actions from the bottom to the top.
It seems that government is not about ethics or making those kind of decisions. It's about what can we get away with and how well can we hide it.
Well, we have to set the ground, the stage for correct and you know, we have difficult enough challenges in this country. We really have a lot of problems. Solvency of Social Security, long-term solvency, the Iraq War. These things are very, very global warming. These things are very, very difficult problems and challenges, and it doesn't help now to actually have the stage set for improper decision-making.
Now, Colleen Rowley, you're talking about running for Congress, and obviously you're going to bring a level of credibility to the run based on you know, the fact that you were a whistleblower in terms of the FBI. But, you know, politics is some people might argue, a pretty dirty business. You've had some people telling you need to change your hair, you need to change your wardrobe, those sorts of things. How have you responded to that?
Well, if you, of course, concede to improper actions already at the start, I think there's no hope for someone remaining true to principle. We've all seen that movie. In fact, maybe people haven't seen it so recently. There was a Robert Redford movie out in the 60s called The Candidate.
Oh, yeah, it's a good movie, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and you see the pressures that come to bear on otherwise good people who are trying to, you know, basically step up to the plate and run for elected offices. The things that later occur with a Tom DeLay and unethical, almost scandalous things, I think are a natural outgrowth if you don't set lines in the sand and say, this is where I can no longer compromise my values.
Well,
and
boy,
campaigning certainly has. You have to do that.
Well, I'll tell you, Colleen Rowley, I hope you you can pull that off, because I'll tell you, a lot of people in politics eventually they chip away at that line and they make concessions and eventually they corrupt themselves.
Yeah, there's a term for that actually. Well, of course, we call it the sliding. What do we call it? The slippery slope.
Yes.
You know, there's an old arcane term that I gave two commencement speeches in law schools trying to warn young lawyers about this problem. Using the old term pettifoggery.
Oh.
And it means little unethical things, something like a shyster.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't worry about the little things because you think, well, this isn't a big deal. But as time goes on, these little things just get bigger and bigger.
Exactly.
Now, Colleen Rowley, your speaking out in terms of some of the shortfalls of the FBI was around the arrest of Zacharias Massau. He was been the only person arrested in connection with September 11th. And you said that the Bureau didn't do a great job of sharing information about Zarqawi pre-9/11. Looking at it now and knowing what you know about the FBI, if confronted with a similar situation in 2005, do you think they'd handle it any better?
Well, lots of things have changed internally, and it is a complicated thing I cannot possibly explain in a soundbite here, but there were long endemic problems that had been allowed to fester and grow up maybe over 7 years that formed a backdrop for the lack of sharing. They call it the FISA wall. That actually is over, and there is no more reason for lack of sharing other than maybe perhaps some lingering turf battles. So some things have changed, but other things have not changed. And without transparency and integrity in government, we will have that same type of thing. The FISA wall was about a 6-7 year problem. And without getting some mechanisms of bringing these concerns through government to be more effective, embracing bottom-up leadership, and, of course, having a model for ethical decision-making on top, we're doomed to repeat similar mistakes.
So do you think that, giving a National Intelligence Chief John Negroponte the expanded power he now has over the FBI and creating the National Security Service within the FBI, is that any action in the right direction?
Well, actually, that was probably one of the only recommendations of the 9/11 Commission that I and many other insider people did not agree with.
Mm-hmm.
We already had a director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet, who actually did have authority over all 15 intelligence agencies. And when asked why he did nothing, he was actually asked by the 9/11 Commission because he knew of this case here in Minnesota. Of course, he didn't volunteer that information until last, but about a month before the 9/11 Commission disbanded, he was asked why he didn't do anything. And he said, well, I thought it was their job. Well, we've lacking accountability in these high-level positions, in all positions in government, we're lacking accountability.
Absolutely.
That's the answer.
Okay.
It's not basically calling a new position a new acronym until
right.
The public you've solved it.
Well, that's a good point. I think part of that lack of conscience that you're talking about, or the compromising of a politician's conscience through compromise, has a lot to do with displacing blame and making sure that the onus doesn't land on these people. A lot of them don't. That's the last thing they want to do.
Mistakes have to be admitted.
Yes.
It's a hard, painful thing, and all human beings seek not to admit mistakes. But if you want to be ethical and you want to improve, you've got to unravel what went wrong. Look at the Iraq War. We were led to believe it could be a 3-week war. And now the same person who promised 3 weeks is saying 14 years. If we can't have accountability with that kind of a issue and a problem, how can we hope to have good government?
Yeah. Well, these guys are bad. There's no way around that.
Colleen Rowley, do you think that, you're running for Congress. Isn't it too much to ask the Congress of the United States to be transparent at a certain level?
Well, certainly with intelligence issues, there is a need for some secrecy. But we're at this point, with the war, gives an excuse for doubling and tripling the amount of secrecy. And we have to be very careful to have, even the government leaders have warned right now of the overclassification of information. It's counterproductive to the cause because now you get into the problems of not sharing information due to the classification levels. And you don't even realize it's not just a question of control and PR of what you're going to tell the public. It also hurts the agencies themselves with overclassification.
Wow. So let's a quick yes or no question to tie this up, Colleen Rowley. Do you think the country is safer today than it was prior to 9/11?
No. The international terrorist threat, unfortunately, has grown. And you don't need to listen to me to hear that. You can listen to the leaders of our intelligence agencies tell you that.
That's right. And we share that with our listeners all the time. Well, good luck with your run. Colleen Rowley, it was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
That was it's always sobering to talk to people that have been in the FBI because you realize that on some level, because of classifications, because of a breakdown of communications, because of the amount of people that are working on separate projects, that it's almost designed to be exploited by politicians.
Well, it's designed to be exploited by politicians, and you have, Mark, a system that is designed both internally and by politicians to squash anybody that opens their mouth too long and too loud.
Okay, well, dig this. After the, in just a couple of minutes, we had the revolutionary Pendejo, the revolutionary, on the phone last week, and we ran out of time,
yeah.
And he didn't get to finish saying his piece. So I think that he might call back and finish it. It's 45 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. This is Air America Radio.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
king
of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, my friends.
Hey, man.
Yes, sir.
Sorry to bother you, but Pendejo, the revolutionary.
Great. I've been worried about that guy. Put him on. Hey, man, how's he? Come on, buddy, say it for me.
The revolution.
Whoa, dude, what's the matter, man?
Well, you know how I was using Nerve.com to find recruits for my group, the radical group PUTA?
Yes, I do, of course, yes, you know, to take down the neocons. So, yeah, did you find yourself a revolutionary?
See, Mark.
Oh, no.
Her name is Raven. I mean, that's what she goes by, but I got a peek at her Sam's Club card. Her real name is Rhonda. Anyway.
You don't sound too happy about it. Tell me a little bit about Raven.
Raven winked at me on Nerve. I wrote to her a poem, and she came over within the hour.
Uh-huh.
She had a bottle of Jack Daniels and a couple of pistols. She said, finally, a man with cojones.
Oh, dude, that sounds great. Sounds kind of rock and roll, man. She could be good for you. She hot, is she? I mean, what's she look like?
Well, Mark,
yeah.
I would say with tattoos and piercings, less is more. Raven, however, would not agree, I'm afraid. She is called Raven because she has black feathers tattooed all over her body.
Whoa, pendejo!
I just don't know if we're compatible. Our revolutionary zeal seems to express itself in such different ways.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Raven thinks we should sell narcotics to raise money for stars. I suggested we could raise money by starting a cutting-edge marionette theater that acts out scenes from Das Kapital.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty hardcore, man. I mean, her idea, not yours. Yours is completely wussified. What else you got?
Raven wants to create a disturbance on the floor of the stock exchange, uh-huh. Perhaps set off a tear gas canister. I suggest we act like we're from the 17th century, wear white powdered wigs and finery, and walk about tossing off devastating bon mots at the traders and their greed.
I got a feeling she didn't go for that. Do you guys agree on that? Do you agree on anything, buddy?
Well, I was initially intrigued by her idea to create a computer virus that we would unleash upon GOP headquarters. But she created a prototype on my laptop that made it impossible for me to play Doom for 3 days. And my Sims are starving.
Oh, yeah, okay, your Sims, your little fake people in that game about the fake world where you fake feed them and stuff.
They can die, you know.
Okay.
And another thing, it is a completely compromised my volunteer work for SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. They are out there, you know.
not as far out there as you are, Pendejo. But let me ask you something. You know what she is, don't you?
A dark devil woman?
No, Pendejo. She's an actual revolutionary, man. She is what you claim you want to be, but you just can't handle it.
No, that's not it, Mark. Stompers.
You're a shih tzu.
Cannot be left alone.
Mm.
Stompers simply does not like Raven. So, you know, that's that.
Stop hiding behind Stompers.
Anyway, she plays bass in a band, and that intimidates me. And I saw her once at Paramus Mall making out with another girl. I don't want to get mono, Mark. I may have to break up with Raven.
Dude, you do that, and you're breaking up with the revolution, man. Come on. She's the kick in the ass that Puta's been needing. You should take advantage of this.
Mark, Raven wanted to tie me up and spit in my mouth to show me what it's like to be a woman.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude.
Mark, I'm so frightened. I can hear a motorbike approaching. I have to turn the lights off and hide. You've got to help me, Mark. She makes me take my shirt off and touches me where my bathing suit covers.
You're on your own, Pendejo. Take it easy.
Until next week,
viva
la revolution!
I think he's got
nasty, filthy business.
He's got himself into some trouble. It
seems that way.
I think I dated Raven. Or several different versions of her in college, anyways. Definitely. And not with that many tattoos. So let's talk about something here, Riley. Did you see this piece about this satellite-based monitoring system that they're actually going to have the technology to put something in your car that's connected to a satellite that if you accelerate beyond the speed limit, it will automatically slow your car down?
Yeah.
Big Brother is watching us, and that's what we pay him for. What the hell is that?
This is something they're developing in Britain, and they're using a carrot and stick approach, Mark. You know, in Britain, like, for example, here in London,
carrot
you have to pay.
Approach. Still stuck on that.
Yeah.
Carrot and stick approach. What is that?
In other words, in London, you have to pay to go into the center of the city.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
They charge you every time you come from outside London into London.
In a car.
Yeah. It's called congestion charge.
Okay, dig it.
All right. Now, this monitoring system would involve a discount on the congestion charge if a motorist decided to use it.
If you get it put in your car.
Exactly. You get it put in your car, you pay less to come into London.
Because the idea is if they initiate this thing, that people's lives will be saved because there are a lot of accidents due to speeding.
Yeah, they estimate 1,000 lives a year in Britain. I don't know what that would translate to here in the States. I'm not sure that there would be a market beyond maybe one or two cities in this country for something
I'll
like
tell you, this is one of those things that I just find, like, I seem to, as I get older, to be a little weird about this kind of stuff. It's like, if you can't take responsibility for your own car, if you can't follow the rules, what do you got to pay or be offered a deal to have somebody, you know, do the rules for you, to actually, you know, guide your behavior?
But see, here's the thing. In America,
I'm turning into a Republican.
No. Yeah. Everybody in America, it seems, drives over the speed limit. I mean, you get on the highway, it's a 55-mile-an-hour limit. What are people driving? They're driving 65. That's
right.
What they do.
Yeah.
So.
And?
So do you think that people really want to be slowed down by 10 miles an hour?
Yeah, but that's part of the fun. It's like, hey, can I get away with this? How fast are we going? I mean, what are you taking away all the fun in life?
Well, yeah. If you get stopped by a state trooper, you will.
Yeah, I know, but still, it's like you should be willing to take your own risks and make your own decisions about this.
But when you're on a highway with other people, you're never taking just your own risk or just your own decision.
Riley, it seems to me that you're supporting the satellite system.
No, I'm just supporting not hitting somebody at 90 miles an hour.
All right. Well, how about at 80 or 75?
No.
All right. So, look, you know, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court a little more with Dahlia Lithwick, who is a writer for Slate, who has done some extensive writing on Sandra Day O'Connor. We got Lawton Smalls coming up.
Yep, and we got this guy Chris Landon from this organization, Newsbreakers.
The Pranksters.
Spoofers, Pranksters, we'll find out. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You know, I hope you had a good weekend, I hope you had a safe weekend. I hope that you didn't blow your hand up or hurt yourself. You ever had a firework go off in your hand?
No, but you know, every 4th of July weekend, it seems, in New York anyway, somebody does.
Did you have a good 4th of July weekend, my friend?
I saw the pig races.
What does that even mean? You mean that?
I mean they have pig races.
All right. Okay.
That's what fairs are all about.
Oh, that's right. You went to the state fair.
I went to the state fair, man, and just before the downpour on Friday night.
Here I was thinking, is it midterm elections aren't for another? All right. So,
no, not that big. Right?
Well, over the weekend, obviously on Friday, you know, my weekend was kind of ruined by the fact that Sandra Day O'Connor retires, and I'm like, oh, great, now I got to do homework all weekend. Now what do I got? But thank God we have this guest. We were all expecting Rehnquist to jump ship on the, but on Friday, Sandra Day O'Connor steps up and says that she's one retiring, given that she is considered a moderate conservative, one who has frequently cast a pivotal vote. Now she's out. What does this mean for the Supreme Court's future? Are we in for some conservative judicial activism? I believe we are. Dahlia Lithwick is a senior editor and chief Supreme Court watcher at Slate Magazine. She joins us now from Virginia on the phone. Good morning, Dahlia. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
I'm glad you're well. So what we've been talking all morning about this. I mean, what can we expect to happen here? I mean, from our point of view, it's sad that we have to accept that we're going to have a moderate Republican. Who do you think it's going to be?
Well, there's two sorts of rumors out there over the weekend. One is the Alberto Gonzalez rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And that essentially says Bush is his own man. He doesn't take advice very well. You know, he's got a pattern. He likes to promote from within. He likes to promote his close friends. For all those reasons, Gonzalez makes some sense. And the more the far right tells him they don't want Gonzalez, the more he's going to dig in.
He's going to dig in. That's interesting, though, isn't it? Because on some level, is he just going to kind of infantilize the far right and say, shut up, I'm president? I mean, doesn't he care about what those people think?
I mean, it's a good question. It's sort of, I think that's the million-dollar question right now, is if he's going to... you know, if he's going to accept that that's his base, and he's got, you know, given that he's lost so much support from moderates, you know, does he pander to that base, or does he continue with, you know, a pretty consistent Bush pattern of saying, look it, I am my own man, and this is who I want, you know, to be on the court. It really does, in some sense, turn on which of his pathologies kind of kicks in right now.
Well, it seems to me that if I'm looking at, if I'm going to parse the way that Alberto Gonzalez is handling himself and the confidence that he's exuding, that they clearly know who it's going to be.
Right, and that's, I mean, certainly that's what I've heard, is that you know, all the big money's on Gonzalez. You know, don't forget, I think given Rehnquist's state of health, there's not much question in my mind Bush is going to appoint someone else soon. Mm. And so I think a little bit of the pressure to get it completely right goes away. This is almost, you know, the first one is for practice. And he can do it again with someone else. And so I think maybe he feels a little freer to nominate, you know, one candidate that the right loves, one candidate that he loves, and split the baby.
Mm.
I think there's, you know, there is that kind of confidence there. But I agree with you. Certainly what I'm seeing is that it really looks an awful lot like Gonzalez is the man. You know, and then the other names on the short list, I mean, we're just not going to know for sure, but the other names on the short list are, you know, Michael Luig on the Fourth Circuit, Sammy Alito. That there's been a scary rumor about Janice Rogers from...
Janice Rogers Brown, sure.
From California, who's now on the D.C. Circuit.
That would be a nightmare.
Once you start, you know, parsing the short list, it's a little scary. There's some real... you know, hardcore right-wingers on that list.
But, Dahlia Lithwick, there has been a history. I mean, if you go back to Theodore Roosevelt, who appointed Oliver Wendell Holmes to the court, and then watched Oliver Wendell Holmes vote against his interest. When you look at Dwight Eisenhower's appointment of Earl Warren, Warren led probably the most liberal court, certainly in the last century. Does Bush risk anything in terms of people not actually ending up deciding issues that come before the court the way he thought they might?
Sure he does, but I think, you know, in light of that, and in light of the fact that, you know, suitor is now a verb in Washington, you know, like, there's such terror that they're going to appoint someone who you know, looks like he's hard on the right wing and then drifts leftward. And don't forget, this is a court. 7 out of the 9 members of this court were appointed by Republicans. So every day is a reminder of the fact that that happens. I think that the response is then to overcompensate. I think that's where your Borks come from, the idea that they're so aware of this trend that they're going to put someone on the court who absolutely cannot fail them. And I think that's, you know, that idea is forefront on the minds, I think, of the sorts of people who think about the court, that they're so aware of this tendency to drift to the left or this tendency. You know, the explanations for why this happens are very funny when you read what they write. Like, they really do think that justices are very, very influenced by cocktail parties, you know, and they feel like they have to become more liberal so they get to the right cocktail parties.
But now, do Democrats really have the horses to stop a hard right nominee?
Well, I mean, you know, this is a big game of chicken. Like, I think this is going to be the filibuster, you know, the filibuster choice for the Dems and the nuclear option on the Republican side. I do think this is going to be that game of chicken that we averted earlier this summer. And you know, there's a real question about whether either side wants to go that far, you know, wants to take sort of their own credibility that far. But I really do think that the way it looks as though these two sides have mobilized and the sort of dementia on, I think, almost both sides, even before there's a candidate, millions of dollars are pouring in and marches
right.
are happening, and there's already commercials being aired without even having a nominee.
Right.
I think that the level of anxiety is so high that I can't see this being resolved in any way other than the most sort of Armageddon.
Wow. Well, Dahlia Lithwick, I read your piece in the New York Times on Sunday about Sandra Day O'Connor. Now, a couple of questions. You know, what are we losing in Sandra Day O'Connor? Why is she leaving? You know, what are your impressions of her?
I'm one of those people who, you know, try as I may, can't stay mad at O'Connor, because I sort of feel like even though she is and was a reliable conservative, even though she was one of the people sort of at the forefront of this dumb notion that states have sort of more dignity, is the word they keep using, than individuals, you know, than women and minorities and disabled, I still felt like over the years she, you know, more often than not, I did the right thing for women, for minorities, for racial and disabled minorities. I think that it's she is just the last of the great moderates. She really, I think, decided cases case by case. I don't think she was triangulating from an ideology. And as much as she's sort of a small C conservative in that she, you know, doesn't like big change and she, you know, wants things to go back to, you know, Warden June Cleaver Day, she has an amazing sensitivity to those who, you know, in the religious cases, for instance, who feel shamed or excluded, an amazing sensitivity to pregnant women in the abortion cases. And I just don't think that she always gets the credit from the political left. I mean, now she's getting it because we're so terrified about what's coming next. But I don't think she gets the credit for having really been kind of a champion of the downtrodden, despite the fact that she did it in a sort of surly, nasty way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to lose. I mean, I don't think there's a chance of someone coming on the court who looks at cases in this sort of old-fashioned common law case-by-case way. And I think the other thing that's really important to understand, and I don't know that this is always clear to folks, is that she, because she was that fifth vote for so long, not only was the fifth vote, she wrote those opinions.
Right.
And so affirmative action, you know, the affirmative action test is her test. The religious displays in public spaces, that's her test. The abortion, you know, undue burden on a mother test, that's her test. So everything goes back on the table. Everything that she authored, because she authored it, you're going to get someone new on the court. There's no longer, you know, O'Connor that says, you know, I'm the fifth vote, therefore I get to sort of be the architect of what this whole area of law is. And I think that's the part that's really, really, you know, worth noting. I think we have an illusion in this country that, well, the law is set.
So the stakes are...
If someone else comes on the court, you know, stare decisis, it's not going to change. That's not true, because it was such a weird sort of set of gut check tests from her.
Sure. So the what's at stake, really, all over again, is reproductive freedom, civil rights, affirmative action, because when she goes, on some level, her opinions go with her.
Exactly.
Now, are we ever really going to find out why she's stepping down now?
Well, I think she's been pretty candid all along that, you know, her husband has Alzheimer's, and my understanding is he's even been sort of sitting in her chambers as she worked for the last little while, and I think she really wanted to just be with him, and if you recall that outburst that she had, you know, Bush v. Gore at the election, when she said, you know, as the returns were coming in front of people, like, oh, this is terrible, when they called it for Gore, she's made it clear for years now that she wanted to step down when she could be replaced by a Republican.
Okay. Well, Dahlia Lithwick, we appreciate you you being with us. It was great talking to you.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So later, hopefully, we'll get into some of those. It's interesting that she really called it that this is going to be a real chicken fight. This is going to get intense. There'll be a lot of money in it, and it's going to be a big standoff. We got Lawton Smalls coming up next. Stay with us. It's 17 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. What do we got to listen to Black Crowes? Is that what I got to do now? I got to wait. And I was just listening to Buddy Guy and Junior Wells do their version
hard
of that.
Hard to handle?
Who did the original one?
Well, Otis did.
Okay, there you go. So, look, folks, we'll be broadcasting live from Vox Pop Coffee Shop on, how do you say this?
Cortelyou.
Cortelyou Road in Flatbush, Brooklyn. Obviously, I've never been there. This is Friday, this Friday, July 8th. Come see me and Mark, and you can touch Mark.
No.
Get some free coffee.
Touch Lawton Smalls. Touch Mark Maron. Don't touch me.
Yeah, they'll all be there. And since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it is important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. As you said, you brought up Lawton, so I'm going to bring up Lawton because he's on the phone. So how are you? Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. You can't touch me either.
Yeah.
John's behind the grill, and he's cooking up freedom.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Freedom.
Yeah, I hear you. So how was the big 4th of July on Planet Bush there, Lawton?
Even an America hater like you would have loved it. First, there was a red, white, and blue parade down Main Street.
Uh-huh.
I played the sousaphone and the marching Uncle Sam band.
Yeah.
We did a Toby Keith medley and marched behind the anti-social security float. Then we all gathered in the town square where some grade school kids reenacted 9/11.
Oh, my God.
The Siege of Baghdad and the Terry Schiavo vigil.
Wow.
Cute kids. Then there were fireworks, and my favorite one was a display in sparklers of President George W. two-terms mandate Bush refusing to sign the Kyoto Treaty.
Yeah, fireworks.
All in fireworks.
Wow.
It was something that you should have seen it, Mark.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
I tell you, I'd like to just see if they could pull that off. So
They did,
huh? Was there a barbecue or anything like that?
Are you kidding me? We fired enough beef to choke a horse, Mark.
Oh,
Mad Cow hasn't reached Planet Bush, that's for sure. And then after the barbecue, when everyone was all bloated and sleepy, I read aloud to all the folks from the Declaration of Independence.
Wow, that doesn't sound too crazy, I guess.
Mark, have you ever bothered to read the Declaration?
Yes, I have, Lawton. Thank you very much, and thanks for patronizing me.
You haven't read this one.
Uh-huh.
I have a special copy of the Declaration I got from Bob Jones University.
Oh, great.
I think it's important people should hear exactly what the founding fathers intended for this country. Can I read a little bit?
Oh, do I have a choice?
Right,
do I have a choice here?
Here it comes. When in the course of human events,
yeah,
it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, red states from blue states, conservatives from Jesus-hating, bong-sucking liberals.
Yeah, that sounds, Well, I'm sure Thomas Jefferson would use the word bong.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. That homosexuals in tight go-go shorts shall not be allowed to marry like regular people.
Whoa, wait. Go-go shorts. Yeah, that's very 1776, my
that
friend.
That tax cuts are sacred, as it was written in the New Testament.
That's
earth and sky and water is all ours.
Mm-hmm.
And don't belong to the tree-hugging Birkenstockers who want to wreck the economy.
Wait a minute.
Now, we are required to attack Muslims before they attack us.
Wait, that's not in there.
People who vaguely resemble them attack us.
What is that?
That the press shall be cheerful in times of war, even when all evidence is to the contrary.
Lawton, this is all fiction. This is not, it's got nothing to do with the Declaration of Independence. You need to get your money back.
That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, especially if the president's caught receiving oral sex from a fat intern.
So how about lies? How about lies about getting us into a war? Where's that one? How about that?
Big finish. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, yes, it is.
And we crept all over it. Big old pile of right-wing Bob Jones crap. We ruined everything good. That's why we can't have nice things. This is going to come out of my allowance. Sorry, Dave.
Take it easy, man.
Can't have nice things.
You're going to be all right.
We have to live with crap.
Okay, yeah. Pull it together. Well, I thought I didn't even yell at you this time.
I was emotional. Right. I can't talk. You're emotional.
All right. Well, let's pull it together here.
I was real.
I know.
Somebody
sold it to me. Oh, it's so weird. You all right? You okay?
Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for straight, white, Christian men.
Oh, jeez, that's it. Goodbye, Lawton. Goodbye.
God loves America. Deal with it.
Oh, God, enough already. So, he's going to be out there on Friday. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
He'll be at Vox Pop Coffee Shop, Cortelli Road in Flatbush, Brooklyn, this Friday, July 8th. Come down. These things are really a lot of fun. Everybody has a good time. We're having regulars that have actually come to all of them.
Yes.
I haven't seen a guy from the Boston one, the New York one yet, but I'm sure that's only a matter of time. So, coming up, we've got Chris Landon, who is a prankster extraordinaire. He's got a group of them, I think, that shows up on newscasts wearing outfits and stuff behind the newscast. So we'll ask them why and whether it's fun and what it means. Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Noon newscast today, as we were broadcasting live the story of the Highland Hospital power outage, that report was interrupted by protesters.
News8's Elizabeth Harness in our newsroom now with more on the group that claims it's a local media watchdog organization.
Well, Maureen, that's right. They claim to be watchdogs, but after a lengthy detainment by Rochester police, it turns out the group is nothing more than pranksters intent on interrupting local news coverage.
Why is it that some people think it's funny to dress up in weird suits and jump up and down behind reporters doing live shots? Our next guest argues that these aren't just idle pranks. This is media activism. Chris Landon, a.k.a. Buck Lucky Owens, senior political correspondent for Newsbreakers, joins us live in the studio this morning. He's got his we're on tape right now.
Yeah.
We're part of an event, a happening. You're videotaping us, and this is later going to be on your website. Or are you actually newsbreaking us as it right now?
I wouldn't do that to you, Mark. Thanks for having me. We just like to be good documentarians and keep an objective eye. And that's
right.
We keep our camera.
How am I coming out here? Is it good? You know, look all right?
You've got the face for radio, my friend.
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa, that's not very nice. I've been on television. So tell me about, I like what you guys do. I like pranks in general. What separates it in your mind from just being yahoos?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the question you heard there in the clip was, are these guys pranksters or protesters?
Mm-hmm.
And we try to follow up with our events, our transformations, and make some points and bring people into the discussion. In this case, it's media criticism.
Transformations. Explain that word.
Transformations. When we work, we appear in live shots,
mm-hmm.
and we challenge the news organization to deal with a late-breaking story on the scene. I mean, that's the very nature of live reporting, to deal with events in the world as they happen.
You're talking about events in relation to what you're causing to happen? Basically what you do to explain to people who might not have gathered it from the clip
mm-hmm.
is that during a news broadcast, a live news broadcast,
mm-hmm.
you will sort of, one of you guys will show up behind them either wearing a costume or with an outfit on of some kind or something on your shirt. And
absolutely.
This is forcing the news media to deal with what is really happening, which is you're standing there in a lion's head.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not going to make the case that a man in a tiger head is somehow more important than, you know, school funding.
Yeah.
But it's an absurd predicament we put the news stations in, and we challenge them to respond in an objective, disinterested way. I mean, that's part of the experiment. That's what we do.
To see if they'll do that, which will make them look even more ridiculous.
I would say that's not right.
Okay.
If the reporter on scene, if the news station handles the situation in a disinterested way, it's very easy to say, this is exactly what's happening. There is a man behind me in a tiger head. I have no idea what his purpose is, but this is happening. Now, when that doesn't happen, when the viewer sees something absurd, like an invisible suit cavorting around in the background, the viewer is forced to say, well, what on earth is happening on television? Why isn't my source of television news recognized?
What's an invisible suit?
The invisible suit is a one-piece tan unitard that appears to be a naked suit.
It's a great word, unitard.
Ooh. Unitard. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Unitard.
Of course, it's emblazoned with the words invisible suit across.
So you're challenging the news media to address who you are without freaking out or condescending.
Exactly.
But just by bringing to light the reality of you bouncing up and down back there, not only is it funny, but it forces these reporters to not riff, but to be reporters in some way.
Exactly. Okay. And, I mean, the point we try to raise is there are bigger issues out there in the world that may go under the radar for whatever reason a news station decides not to cover these issues. We simply illustrate the fact that the news will ignore a story if it doesn't fit into its pre-described format.
Got it.
Now, how do most news people deal with this? I mean, I know how I would deal with it. I make the whatever it is, lion's head or whatever, part of the story. Ask the lion's head questions about whatever you're there for. Whatever.
Really? Would you do that?
Sure. I would do that.
You don't most people, I would think most people go, all right, let's cut until this clown gets out of here.
Mark, that's a common response, but the idea of challenging the tiger head guy. And
yeah, I mean, not challenging. Hey, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm doing man on the street stuff, if I'm asking people different questions about, okay, you with the tiger head, come here.
That would be a perfect approach. It would be completely disarming for us, and we'd be standing there with our pants down. But you know what? So far, that's not what happens.
Really?
Let's hear this other clip. We have another clip from a local newscast that was interrupted by a quote-unquote reverend who was trying to exorcise the clear channel demons from a television station. Let's hear that, and you can tell us about what this was all about.
We're live downtown tonight. His hope is that it will also become a tourist attraction, as many of his other buildings across the country, even around the world, have in other
clear
cities.
Clear channel, be gone!
Okay, why don't we just go back to you, Jenny? We'll come back in a minute.
All right, we apologize for that interruption.
We're talking to Chris Landon, a.k.a. Buck Lucky Owens, who I assume, was that you as the preacher there?
No, that was Dizzy Monk.
That was one of your other guys, the guerrilla group of pranksters that call themselves the Newsbreakers. So that was an example of somebody that wasn't going to deal, that said, let's cut away because I don't want to be a reporter. There's something wrong here. There's a lunatic.
Sure, and that's a fair response. But that's a good example of how we try to infuse a political point, a media criticism point, into our transformations. In that case, we were protesting Clear Channel Communications' domination of media outlets across this country. I mean, as you guys know, I'm sure, and your viewers your listeners may be aware of, you know, Clear Channel owns more than 1,000 radio stations across the country.
You're on Clear Channel right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Say hello.
Thanks for having me. Now, in the music business, that's sort of homogenized, you know, what we hear as music fans. Clear Channel's moving into television.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to send a message to Clear Channel that, hey, you know, back off.
It's not all Clear Channel, but they do carry some affiliates, Clear Channel affiliates carry Air America.
Yeah.
I guess their argument against that would be essentially that we give the people what they want,
mm-hmm.
but they also decide what the people want in some respects. You and I have my own problems with Clear Channel, believe me.
Well, this is a nice piece of poetic justice, then, of the snake eating its own tail, I suppose.
Now, how many people are part of Newsbreakers at this point?
We have 5 principal members based in Rochester, New York. We have people across the country who are writing into us and saying, hey, how can I start my own chapter? We've got people in town, in Rochester, here in New York.
Well, that was in Utah, wasn't it, that last thing we heard?
That was the Reverend Utah Snakewater, but that was in Rochester.
Oh, that was just upstate.
There wasn't.
Yeah.
Now, you got locked up, or somebody got locked up once?
Well, that is the popular perception and one that makes for a good story, but not exactly. We were detained by some hospital.
Yeah, that's why the woman said detainment. I had never heard that. I thought the word was detention, but hey, I quibble.
Yeah, it felt like detention. the police were called, and we were accused of assaulting a reporter, which goes against all our principles. So we provided some videotape evidence to the police. The police quickly said, oh, obviously nothing of that sort happened here. Regardless, the station in question decided to go on the warpath that night. They gave us 2 minutes on the air where they repeated their charges later in a web story that we had assaulted the reporter, although a police investigation completely proved that to
to be bunk.
Well, I love this. I like what you guys are doing. I've been a big fan of Franksters in general. There's a long history of Franksters having some, at least, you know, elevating the cultural dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of your influences in doing this, or was it just sort of like, dude, let's do this?
Yeah, well, I was working in television news at the time, so one of my biggest immediate influences was watching people in the newsroom respond with utter glee when they would see someone else's live shot go bad. All right, so that was my biggest influence.
That guy's not going network.
You're like, how can we make more of this happen?
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, I mean, that was part of the point that, you know, when you're working in a television newsroom, either you're, one, too busy or too defensive to listen to some critical voices. And I realized this, that we just didn't, we wouldn't pay attention to it, but what we would pay attention to
is the weirdness.
Is the weirdness.
Chris Landon, a.k.a. Buck Lucky Owens, is the senior political correspondent for Newsbreakers, a team of pranksters who do some subversive, you would call it media jacking.
Seditious.
Seditious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is, seditious. Perfect. So what's the worst thing that happened? I mean, what's like, in your mind, how did anything ever get really out of hand?
No, you know, before we go into a story, we know what the story is. We're not going to get in the way of hard-hitting news of social relevance.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the worst thing that ever happened was here in Midtown Manhattan when I was chased up 31st Street by a angry reporter who wrapped his hands around my neck and tried to have his way.
Anybody we know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You watch WABC?
Oh, wait a minute. Not N.J. Burkett.
No, this is a star of the silver and small screens.
Silver and small? Donny Osmond?
No.
You're not going to say?
This is Jeff Rosin.
Oh.
WABC.
And he tried to choke you. Did you get on tape?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's on the website, newsbreakers.org.
Okay. Yeah, now, what did you do to the guy?
Oh, I was sort of a lackadaisical seminarian at the moment. I was reading my Bible,
yeah,
and I was concentrating on a passage while as I wandered through his live shot. What I did apparently was cross the no-fly zone. That's the area, of course, between the camera and the reporter, and he took severe umbrage.
Really? And he chased down a guy with a Bible. Did you think that he knew that you were a goof?
He figured it out once he saw that he had two cameras on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
He chilled out at that point, took his hands off your neck, did he?
What he said
turned
was,
it into a dance number?
What he said was, and we have this on tape, was, do I need to call a lawyer about that?
Well,
actionable.
Look, you can go to www.newsbreakers.org if you want to see the work of Chris Landon and his cohorts.
Yeah. And what we'd really like, when people visit the website, really what we're trying to do is drive them to legitimate media criticism websites, places like mediachannel.org, FAIR, RoryO'Connor.org. These are people who put the serious thought into media criticism. I think your listeners would benefit from their ideas.
Sure.
And all the links are there?
Yes, sir.
Well, Chris Landon, thanks for being with us, and be careful, but keep up what you're doing.
Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for being here.
So I guess when we come back, we'll wrap up a little bit, preview tomorrow's show in terms of who's going to be here, talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court, perhaps. In terms of, like, this is going to be it. This is going to be the fight. This is what we're doing. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's Mornings Edition with Mark and Mark.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
On Air America Radio's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. We did all right today. Let's put this thing down here.
Yeah.
I didn't, it's weird. After 3 days, your brain gets into a different place.
So did your sleep habits, at least mine did.
That's true. Were you a little knocked out today?
Yeah, well, I was a little knocked out yesterday because I was anticipating today.
I couldn't sleep for hell. What's the word I want to do? For
hell or high water.
Well, I mean, I just, like, the first night, Friday night, I slept like 4 hours. Saturday night, I slept like 5 hours. And then last night, I finally laid it down. Folks, we'll be We'll be broadcasting live from Box Pop Coffee Shop in Cortelyou on Cortelyou Road in Flatbush, Brooklyn, this Friday, July 8th. If you want to come down and see the show, we're going to have a good time. We always have a good time at these remotes. Good fun. We've got all the characters coming down, Watton and Cardinal Milfington and Johnny K Street. You might want to come out for that, if you would. Huh?
That's yeah, all I'm it should saying. Be fun. It should be. And you know what's funny about about these neighborhoods in New York, Mark?
Yeah.
When they get to be trendy, it seems like they always change their names. Like Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan turned out to be Clinton.
Yeah.
So they don't call it Hell's Kitchen anymore.
Well, what's this called? It's not called
Ditmas Park.
Ditmas Park.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's a park.
It's a park. It's not Flatbush where you saw Bugs Bunny all the time. It's a different place.
Has it been gentrified or what
happened? It's in process.
It's in process. How much does it cost to live there?
Only $1.1 million as opposed to $1.3 million in Manhattan.
Is it a nice neighborhood, this place?
Yeah, Flatbush is a great place.
It's weird. I am so Manhattan and Queens, and I don't even get that far out on Queens. I got to explore a little more. It's been a while since I went to Coney Island. I could go visit.
Oh, man, Coney Island. You could spend a whole day in Coney Island.
Yeah, I know, but it's so weird. You can get to it's like Russia down there in a lot of areas.
That's Brighton Beach.
Yeah, Brighton Beach is unbelievable. There's Russian bakeries and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
To close out today, you know, we're obviously going to be talking about the Supreme Court for quite a few days to come.
Yeah.
And there's a tremendous battle at stake in terms of, you know, we're in a tough bind because liberals, Democrats, progressives are in a position we have to accept a court justice, a Supreme Court justice that is going to be everything we disagree with on some level. The best we can hope for is a moderate. And, you know, this is the fault of if any of you out there who consider themselves a Democrat who voted for this president because he was scared of terrorism, now this is the price we're going to pay because this has been on the table since he was campaigning. He says, I'm going to put someone in there like Scalia, like Thomas, and now we got a real fight on our hands, and it's hard to say whether or not the Democrats will find the stones to filibuster given the agreement of the Gang of 14, the deal that they cut, the 7 Republicans and 7 Democrats, but I find a problem with that because the Republicans are going to be able to dictate everything about the terms of that deal.
You know what they call this in Brooklyn, though?
What?
In Flatbush.
What?
Taking shorts.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially what we're going to end up doing here. The fact is, the best we can hope for is someone that is at least a scholar, someone that has some knowledge of the legal process and can at least frame whatever conservative values they want to espouse in some form of grounding.
And
ridiculous.
But we got to hope for somebody who, you know, who does a case-by-case assessment of what's going on. The possibilities are stacked with conservative judicial activists. I mean, that's who these people are. I mean, we're in a weird position where you got to think that Alberto Gonzalez might be one of the more reasonable nominees. I just hope to hell that the Democrats get the access to FBI records that they need, have the guts to really take to task whoever is on sitting there being questioned, and not let the Republicans dictate the type of questions they can ask. This is going to be a real fight.
Well, you know, it may not even come to what questions they ask. It may come down to the way they answer. Whoever Bush's nominee is, they will duck and dodge these major issues like affirmative action and abortion as much as they possibly can. They may have something in their past opinions or their past rulings that will touch on these issues, but they are going to try and remain as neutral as possible through the process and then let their conservatism show when they're on the court.
Well, we just want to make sure that people know that the Supreme Court is there to serve the people of this country, you know, and that the court that we have in place now was by no means a liberal court, and they have ruled against the people of this country in a lot of cases. Tomorrow also the Olympic announcements will be coming up, and Mark Riley will be dancing
naked in Macy's window, but don't touch me.
Okay, all right. So wouldn't it be amazing if New York got it? It'd be amazing.
I would be speechless. You'd have to do the show all by yourself because I would have nothing to say.
All right. Well, there's the liberal agenda here. the weekly liberal agenda from the facts from the Streisand compound. Here's all the write these down, liberal marching people, whatever. One, try this party icebreaker. Slap your forehead and say, I could have had a G8. Wait for laughs and quickly change subject to starvation in Africa. Two, picket NASA for its flagrant disregard for comet civil rights. Three, prepare for Mike to replace Sandra Day O'Connor by taking obstructionist yoga class. Namaste. Four, organize your own Live 8 concert, only this time leave out the music altogether. Yeah, that's fun. Today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Eight white guys in one room get to determine the fate of the planet. All they need are sheets and a rope. Wake up, sheeple. BS from white guys causes global warming.
Hey, wait a minute. They got one non-white guy in there.
Oh.
Yeah, the Japanese guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, except for that guy.
Except for him.
All right, so... what does she know? You know what I mean? Giving me the bad information.
Hey, hey.
So tomorrow, I'm looking forward to this live performance by E of the Eels. I like the Eels. They made my cut.
And, of course, we may be getting a call from you, Mark Maron, but sometime in the future.
That's always scary.
It is scary, but it's been fun this morning.
It has been. We pulled it off.
Listen to you tomorrow, or listen to us tomorrow.
There you go.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.